go, let's go. Let's go. Yeah! Hello and welcome to Unbought and Unbossed Canadian Political News and Views. Tonight is show number 94. Today is November the 5th, 2008. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that 9/11 is Canada's single most important issue because the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the current justification for the overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offers further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either ignored or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your televisions off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Our ignore it and maybe it will go away on its own mentality is killing us. It has to end now. It is high time to wake up and to educate, to learn to work together, and to find the courage to act on our love for one another. Our every freedom is at stake in this battle for truth and accountability. The prize is nothing less than the health of our collective human soul. The revolution has begun. Find your role. Thank you, Bruce Coburn. Actions speak louder, as always. Right now, we're listening to DJ Shadow. It's going to be followed by Ashley McIsaac. What do I have for you today? Episode number 94. I have an in-studio interview in the first half hour with Larry Owaskow. He is running for mayor of Nanaimo. Larry, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. We'll be getting into you before too long, so hang tight and I'll be with you.
Heck.
Alrighty. Also, in the last half hour of the show, we're going to have a short story and a song by CHLY's own Lynn Thompson, Living on Purpose Lynn Thompson. And in this short story, I'm going to have a part. I'm going to be the shiny penny. So there we are. Yesterday, pretty big day in world history, the U.S. election, of course. The Democrats did indeed win the presidency, Obama. They also increased their majorities in the House and in the Senate. A couple numbers here. This is the percentage of the popular vote. Obama, 52.4. McCain, 46.3. Now, where I'm going with that, you add that up, it comes to 98.7. Let's remember that number for a second. Ralph Nader, on the other hand, a truth teller, would have been the best choice for president in my opinion, got half of a percent. Also, former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, advocate of the truth movement, got, 10% of 1%, 0.1% of the popular vote. So let's come back to that 98.7. I personally believe that there is very, very little difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, and that they are controlled by the same power. So very unfortunate that, the work of this truth movement, what has happened? Well, almost 99% of you vote for the devil. You know, Obama, and sure, he's a good speaker, and he uses that word, what the hell is it? Is it choice? No, chance, what? Larry, what's his big word? Change. That's right, change. And, well, that would be nice, and let's hope that he can make some change, you know, starting by reversing most of the things that the Bush administration has done in the last 7-8 years. Nail them for the crime of 9/11 would be the best thing, but that's not likely going to happen. Obama's not the answer, and, I mean, he's better than Bush, but, I mean, who wouldn't be, right? Another race I was following yesterday, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House for the Democrat, beat Cindy Sheehan, the anti-war activist. The percentages were 72 for Pelosi and 17% for Cindy Sheehan. That was in California's 8th district. So unfortunate there. Okay, so I'm sure I'll be talking about the election, you know, for quite a while, won't we all be? But let's carry on. What else are we going to look at today? In between the interviews, I'm going to be reading from a new book to me. It came out last year. It is called The David Icke Guide to Global Conspiracy and How to End It. I'm going to be reading a short passage looking at life after death. And where I'm going with this is that if it were possible for us to lose our fear of death and fear in general, it would unleash us to become active and to make positive change. And, so I'm going to talk about losing your fear. So there we are, Dave. Oh, as a matter of fact, I want to read the back of the book. It's a very thick book. And I picked it up from John Faulkner Books, Downtown Nanaimo. I like to support independent a bookseller because, well, we're an independent radio station and we got to stick together. So that's where I ordered this book from. And John says that many people have ordered this book. It's a popular one. A lot of Ike fans in the Nanaimo area, it appears. This is what the back of the book has to say. So if you don't know who David Icke is, this will be your introduction as well. In 1990, David Icke set out to answer the big questions. Who are we? Where are we? Who is really controlling world events? And to what end? The journey has taken him to more than 40 countries and has brought massive ridicule and condemnation from closed minds and those who have no wish for humanity to understand the nature of its plight. It made no difference to David Icke as he continued to communicate his findings without fear of the consequences, and now the tide is turning. As what he has predicted in previous books unfolds by the day, enormous and ever-gathering numbers are looking into his work in a new light. The David Icke Guide to Global Conspiracy is both extraordinary and unique. It is a masterpiece in dot connecting and reveals the hidden links between apparently unconnected people, events, and subjects to show how it all fits together. Only when the dots are connected can an astounding picture be seen. There is a wow, indeed many of them, on every page as Icke lifts the veil on everything from ancient history to 9/11 to the holographic internet that dictates our reality. The global conspiracy to impose an Orwellian state is no theory. It is supported by endless evidence and today by daily experience. A network of interbreeding families going back to the ancient world are manipulating events through their puppet politicians and front people to bring about the tyranny they have worked so long and tirelessly to instill. There we are. That's a little bit of David Icke for you. He's got a lot of theories that are, pretty far out there for myself still, and I certainly don't buy everything I read, and, well, no, I do read it. I don't buy it as in agree because I read it. That's what I'm trying to say. So there we are. Moving on, we're going to have a couple audio pieces. One by Leonard Peltier, a political prisoner in the United States. These is words spoken by him, put together with Oliver Shanti, friends and family. And again, I will have links to, pretty much everything I talk about tonight on my website. If you want to get a pen, you can check that out, because I do archive previous shows, so you can listen to one if you missed it. So, website address is Unbossed, that's UNBOSSED, Unbossed.com. www.livejournal.com. Okay, so before we get to the interview with mayoral candidate Larry Owaskow of Nanaimo, we're going to listen to an audio piece. This comes from the Cafferty File. That's a show on CNN. This was give or take 2 years ago. And it's Bush trying to pardon himself. This is a short piece. It came from DJ Ball of Vancouver We Are Change. Travis will be a guest on my show in the coming weeks, so that is nice. And on his email, he has a tag, and it's a definition of fascism. And I'm going to share that with you in case you'd... It sounds, by saying, sound familiar, so listen up and see if anything sounds familiar. Fascism, an economic system in which the power elite, variously termed oligarchy, plutocracy, cabal, or ruling class, employ the police power of the state to enforce the economic domination of privately owned cartels and corporations, industrial and financial. It's a militaristic regime that exalts nation above the individual, the rich above the poor, uses violence and modern techniques of propaganda and censorship to forcibly suppress political opposition, and stands for a totalitarian government headed by a dictatorial leader. Sound familiar? Does to me. Does to me. So here we are, Bush trying to pardon himself. Then we're going to hear a song, The Love Song by Marilyn Manson. And he asks, you know, do you like your God and your guns together, man? Well, you know, in the U.S., if you want to become president, you have to love and worship both of those things, it seems. Pretty unfortunate there, too. So that's going to do it. Of course, you're listening to CHLY at 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. We're online at www.chly.ca. I will be back with Larry Owaskow after Bush pardoning himself and The Love Song by Marilyn Manson. Take it away.
Ordinarily, we don't do a question 2 days in a row, but this is important enough to be an exception. The House just passed President Bush's bill to redefine the treatment of detainees, and the Senate's expected to do the same thing tomorrow. Buried deep inside this legislation is a provision that will pardon President Bush and all the members of his administration of any possible crimes connected with the torture and mistreatment of detainees, dated all the way back to September 11, 2001. At least President Nixon had Gerald Ford to do his dirty work. President Bush is trying to pardon himself. Here's the deal. Under the War Crimes Act, violations of the Geneva Conventions are felonies, in some cases punishable by death. When the Supreme Court ruled the Geneva Conventions applied to Al-Qaeda and Taliban detainees, President Bush and his boys were suddenly in big trouble. They've been working these prisoners over pretty good. In an effort to avoid possible prosecution, they're trying to cram this bill through Congress before the end of the week when Congress adjourns. The reason there's such a rush to do this, if the Democrats get control of the House in November, well, this kind of legislation probably wouldn't pass. You want to know the real disgrace of what these people are about to do or in the process of doing? Senator Bill Frist and Congressman Dennis Hastert and their Republican stooges apparently don't see anything wrong with this. I really do wonder sometimes what we're becoming in this country. The question is this. Should Congress pass a bill giving retroactive immunity to President Bush for possible war crimes? Email your thoughts to Cafferty File at CNN.com or go to CNN.com/CaffertyFile.
Wolf. Jack, thanks.
So
welcome back to the Unbought and Unbossed show. At that, I'm going to take a break here. We got to do some campus community updates.
Oh, man, so, I'll give you a few of mine.
Okay, hang tight. Well, we're not allowed to start until the theme song comes on. Yeah, okay. Hey, that sounds like a theme song to me. Hey, that's okay. Keep her going, man. Oh, no, you can't keep her going. Hold on, I'm going
to
hit...
You have to mute me, otherwise I won't say a word, brother.
Okay, it's campus community update time. You're listening to the Unbought and Unbossed show. I'm your host, Raymond Geisler. And, of course, listening to CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo to Nanaimo's best radio station by far. And 7,000 to 10,000 students learn about various art forms. A certain bank, I'm not going to list their name, will be in attendance, and they're going to present the gallery with a $10,000 check to get the name entitlement. Well, you're not going to get that name on this show.
You know, it's too bad the radio doesn't have a more visual thing because, you know, you look professional, you're sharp, everything's good, you know. Oh, man, I'm sorry, and I'm wearing a dark suit with a tie
right
now.
You're looking pretty spiffy,
too. Oh, thank you, buddy.
You look very Merrill.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, you know what? I shaved, and...
I shaved yesterday.
I shave once a year, and I shaved yesterday.
Cool.
Yeah, so if I sound a little bit different, that's what it is.
I shave twice a day, once for me, once for the wife.
Very nice. Okay.
Thank you.
I don't think I'm going to go with any more those personal shaving questions, but where do we go? How about...
We can make it work. Nanaimo will be the best.
I hope so. Larry, thank you very much for coming on the show. I wish you the best in your strive for political mayoralship and all future endeavors.
Excellent. Thank you, young man.
I only look young because I shaved my gray beard off. Yeah, I had a couple persons at where I work.
Yes.
Guessed my age, and they were way over.
They guessed your age?
They guessed my age, right.
Do you ever play Frank Zappa on this program?
I have not yet.
If you find... We can actually make a change. We can make it work.
Let's hope so.
Well, let's hope so. You and I can make it work.
I'm trying.
Let's spread out. Let's spread out. Larry Iwasco for mayor, November 15th.
There we are. Thank you very much, Larry. You are off air now, just so you know. Where are we going to go now? I'm going to take us to an audio piece. This comes to us from Leonard Peltier, a political prisoner in the States. I've got a quick bio here I'm going to read you, and then I'll put that piece on as I see Larry out. So, he is the latest in a long line of First Nations political prisoners. The track we're going to hear is called Sun Dancer, lyric by Leonard Peltier, together with Oliver Shanty, Family and Friends. So here's the blurb that they have, and I'll, again, I give links to everything that's on the show. Visit my website, unbossed.livejournal.com. So Leonard Peltier is a human rights and ecological activist, member of the American Indian Movement. In a trial which was called a disgrace for the American legal system by the former Governor General Ramsey Clark, he was falsely accused of murdering two FBI agents and sentenced to two life terms imprisonment in 1976. One big problem there, Leonard Peltier is innocent. But the government wanted to brand him as a criminal and, through him, the Native American Civil Rights Organization AIM. Their crime, to protest against the ongoing land robbery and constant human rights violations committed by the U.S. government, the FBI, and the mining corporations in their reservations in South Dakota. At the time, these companies tried by all means to lay their hands on their mineral resources, mainly uranium, of the Native American territories. And as a consequence of the uranium mining activities, the drinking water was poisoned, and the death rate among the Native Americans rose dramatically. Leonard Peltier is a Lakota Ojibwe Native American, is a symbol of the justified struggle of his people and its suffering. The vision of this man, unbroken to this day, is justice, a considerate relation towards Mother Earth and a peaceful coexistence of the white man and the red man through a revival of North American culture and traditions. This song carries his message into the world and hopefully will help Leonard Peltier to finally obtain the right to spend the remainder of his life in freedom instead of suffering the unspeakable injustice he has endured until the year 2041. Numerous big names have stood behind Leonard Peltier asking for his release, including Mother Teresa, the Dalai Lama, Bishop Desmond Tutu. So if you want more information on this, you can visit www.freepeltier.org. You spell Peltier, P-E-L-T-I-E-R. Okay, so here it is. This is called Sun Dancer, and I'll be back reading the David Icke piece about if we can lose our fear, the potential, the possibilities are just open up big. So here we are, Leonard Peltier. See you shortly.
Shadowed night. Sometimes in a shadowed night, I become spirit. Walls, bars, the gratings dissolve into light, and I unloosen my soul. And fly through the inner darkness of my being. I become transparent, a bright shadow, a bird of dreams, singing from the tree of life. I have only a past, and perhaps a future. The present has been taken from me. I'm left in an empty space whose darkness I carve at with the knife of my mind. I must carve myself anew out of the razor wire and nothing else. I will know the ecstasy and the pain of freedom. I will be ordinary again. Yes, ordinary. That terrifying condition where all is possibility, where the present exists and must be faced. Silence. I am the Indian voice. listen to me. I speak for our ancestors. They cry out to you from the unstill grave. I speak for the children yet unborn. They cry out to you from the unspoken silence. I am the Indian voice. Listen to me. I am a chorus of millions. Hear us. Our ego cry will not be still. We are your own conscience calling to you. We are yourself, crying unheard within you. Let my unheard voice be heard. Let me speak in my heart in the words that be heard, whispering on the wind to many, to all hear, to all with ears to hear, and hearts to be as one with mine.
Hello, my name is Dylan, and I am the program manager for CHLY 101.7 FM. On behalf of all the programmers here at CHLY, we would like to thank you for your support during our annual membership drive. CHLY is proud to announce that 84 new members have joined the society, and thanks to all the existing members that renewed their membership, as well as our business sponsors, $9,300 in total was pledged. If you made a pledge, please come see us at the station or mail a check to the Radio Malaspina Society, number 234 Victoria Crescent, Nanaimo, BC, V9R 5B8. And once again, thank you very much for your support.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Dylan, for that. And for those people that made pledges for the CHLY membership drive 2 weeks back, thank you very, very much. If you are a little bit slow to get that check in the mail or to get your body down to the studio, please make good on your pledge. Thank you very much. That is how we stay on the air. So, where are we going to go now? We're going to move into David Icke. Going to be reading from his latest book. It's The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy and How to End It. I read the back of the book earlier, and on the front he's got a quote by John Lennon. And it says, "Our society is run by insane people for insane objectives. I think we're being run by maniacs for maniacal ends, and I think I'm liable to be put away as insane for expressing that. That is what's insane about it." Indeed, just to mention these things, and, you know, like I was saying earlier, David Icke, you know, talks about a lot of things that you're not going to hear on your TV, so he is out there, and good for him. You know, not living in fear of the people that made fun of him, and good for him. And you know, he is a researcher and a free thinker. So very nice. This book came out last year. I'm going to be reading from the first chapter. So who are we? And the subsection is life after life. Where we're going to pick up here is he's talking about his mother who died approximately a year before writing this. And where he's going to go with this is to suggest that the research has found that when people die, for example, on the operating table and they're brought back to life, many of them have vivid remembrances of what happened at that time when they were dead. And one of the things that happens to these people that were, you know, dead and then brought back, you know, with medical techniques, is that they lost their fear of death. And it, you know, revolutionized their lives, and it really changed, you know, because of this loss of fear. So I think this is a really important idea, and so let's get into it. So he's talking about his mother who was in pain and suffering from various ailments. So, David Icke. In latter times, her body was constantly failing, and her conscious mind flipped between clarity and confusion. Why should anyone grieve for her when she had left that suffering to reemerge in a paradise? I was relieved that her battle was over and that she suffered no more, much as I miss her presence. I have never met or read of anyone who has had a near-death experience and wanted to come back. There are now fantastic numbers of documented accounts of people who have left their bodies at death and witnessed reality beyond this realm, only for their bodies to be revived. So there we are. Yeah, these people that have, through death, left their bodies, witnessed a alternative reality, and then, you know, doctors revived them. So a Dutch cardiologist, Wim van... Oh, hey, there's Lynn Thompson, early. Hi, Lynn. You're not on yet, but she's here. Dutch cardiologist Pim van Lommel produced a massive study of near-death experiences that supported the whole concept of life after death, as well as raising questions about DNA, the collective unconscious, and ideas of karma. His findings were published in the British medical journal The Lancet. Van Lommel's interest was sparked 35 years ago when a patient told him about her near-death experience. But his serious study only began after he later read a book called Return from Tomorrow, in which the American doctor George Ritchie detailed his own experience of near-death. Van Lommel began to ask all his patients if they remembered anything during their cardiac arrests. These are just some of the accounts he recorded. So this is a patient that died. And this person says, I became detached from the body and hovered within and around it. It was possible to see the surrounding bedroom and my body even though my eyes were closed. I was suddenly able to think hundreds or thousands of times faster and with greater clarity than is humanly normal or possible. At this point, I realized and accepted that I had died. It was time to move on. It was a feeling of total peace, completely without fear or pain. It didn't involve any emotions at all. So there we are, emotion-free. That's interesting. So let's carry on. This is another quote from a patient that died and came back. I was looking down at my own body from up above and saw doctors and nurses fighting for my life. I could hear what they were saying. Then I got a warm feeling, and I was in a tunnel. At the end of that tunnel was a bright, warm, white, vibrating light. It was beautiful. It gave me a feeling of peace and confidence. I floated towards it. The warm feeling became stronger and stronger. I felt at home, loved, nearly ecstatic. I saw my life flash before me. Suddenly, and yes, we kind of knew that there was a suddenly coming in there, suddenly I felt the pain of the accident once again and shot back into my body. I was furious with the doctors, that the doctors had brought me back. This experience is a blessing for me, for now I know for sure that body and soul are separated and that there is life after death. It has convinced me that consciousness lives on beyond the grave. Death is not death, but another form of life. Okay, so we're getting back into David Icke, and he says, the tunnel, the bliss, being met by long past loved ones, and the disappointment at having to come back are constant themes of near-death experiences. Van Lommel said that when some people return, they often have a sense of being imprisoned, compared with the freedom they had briefly experienced. Others say it has transformed their lives, and they lose all their fear of death. This understanding would free everyone from this ultimate fear, and that is why this knowledge has been systematically suppressed, for reasons he will get to later. The hidden hand I am going to expose wants the population in fear of death, in fact, in fear of everything. When people are in a state of fear, they are most easily controlled and manipulated. Here's a quote from Von Lommel. The most important thing people are left with is that they are no longer afraid of death. This is because they have experienced that their consciousness lives on, that there is continuity. Their life and their identity don't end when the body dies. They simply have the feeling they're taking off their coat. Exactly, exactly, says David Icke. What passes through that tunnel, what makes that the transition, is our consciousness, our awareness. The computer is buried or cremated, not the awareness that provided its power source. And another quote of Von Lommel. At that moment, these people are not only conscious, their consciousness is even more expansive than ever. They can think extremely clearly, having memories going back to their earliest childhoods, and experience an intense connection with everything and everyone around them, and yet the brain shows no activity at all. That is consciousness. What is consciousness, and where is it located? What is my identity? Who is doing the observing when I see my body down there on the operating table? What is life? What is death? Returning to David Icke and concluding here, he says the answers come in one short sentence. They are different states of awareness, and that awareness is located everywhere. So that's, according to this, the meaning of life and death, according to David Icke, is that it is different states of awareness, and that awareness is located everywhere. You can have body awareness or infinite awareness or something between the two. Van Lommel points out that the brain does not produce consciousness or store memories. He says that American computer science expert Simon Berkovic and Dutch brain researcher Herms Rahman, both working independently of each other, found it was impossible for the brain to store even a fraction of our thoughts and experiences. Van Lommel's conclusions from his research are the same that I have been outlining here, and that is that the brain slash body is a receiver and transmitter of information, just like a computer or television. So there we are, according to some of these doctors. There is indeed something far different after our earthly human death, And the soul seems to, well, it wasn't called the soul there, but I guess you can call it, well, a couple different things. I choose to call it the soul. Something happens. Something happens. And if that's the case, that, you know, through that experience, you lose your fear of death. I'm quite sure that, well, I mean, so many of the people that I try to have on this show, you know, the great thinkers and these courageous activists, I think that they're kind of on that page, you know. They've lost the fear that most people seem to have, you know, and they're able to, you know, move past that to do the greatest good. And that's a neat thing, and I see that connection here. And, well, I hope it was useful to you. I'm really enjoying this book of David Icke's latest work. So, very nice. We are going to leave that. I would not be surprised if I return to that book with you in the coming weeks and months. So where we're going to go now is to an audio piece, and this is looking at, well, elections in the States and stolen elections in the States. And this clip is from a computer programmer slash whistleblower. Clinton Curtis is his name. And he has some remarkable things to tell us. This happened in December of 2004. It is at the U.S. House Judiciary Committee on the public hearings on election irregularities. So this would be looking at the problems in Ohio primarily, and numerous other states. Of course, you know, Florida was the problem in 2000. And it moved to Ohio in 2004, and now we have a Democrat elected. I sure would like to be optimistic and positive that Obama is going to be, you know, an answer to our problems. And I'm afraid it's bigger than any one president. And I'm thinking back, what happened to Kennedy? You know, he was a courageous man who wanted to make some large changes in the way the American military-industrial complex works. And we know what happened there. So, very, very fascinating time to be alive, that's for sure. A lot of history happening every day, it seems. So, let's move on to this whistleblower, Clinton Curtis. Again, he's a computer techie. And, well, he's has some remarkable information to share about the technology of these computer voting machines. So let's listen to that, and I'll be back with Lynn Thompson of Living on Purpose, a fellow host on CHLY, and we're going to hear a short story and perhaps a song as well. So we'll be back in about 10 minutes. Hang in there, friends.
Mr. Curtis, would you please state your full name for the record?
My name is Clinton Eugene Curtis.
And where do you reside?
Tallahassee, Florida.
And what is your profession?
I'm a computer programmer.
Would you please speak into the microphone so the audience can hear your testimony?
I'm a computer programmer.
Mr. Curtis, are there programs that can be used to secretly fix elections?
Yes.
How do you know that to be the case?
Because in October of 2000, I wrote a prototype for President Congressman Tom Feeney at the company I worked for in Oviedo, Florida, that did just that.
And when you say did just that, it would rig an election?
It would flip the vote 51-49 to whoever you wanted it to go to and whichever race you wanted to win.
And would that program that you designed be something that elections officials that might be on county boards of elections could detect?
They never see it.
Mr. Would you answer that question once again?
They would never see it.
So how would such a program, a secret program that fixes the election, how could it be detected?
You would have to view it either in the source code, or you'd have to have a receipt and then count the hard paper against the actual vote total. Other than that, you won't see it.
All right, Mr. Curtis, if you had been asked, you or others with your professional expertise had been asked to design a protective program that would protect the Ohio elections from against such software to fix the election, Could you have done so?
If we've been asked to make a program that can fix the election, sure, anybody can do it.
No, could you have designed a program or a procedure or a protocol that would have protected Ohio against this?
No, you have to look at the source code. You have to get probably programmers from both or all parties to look at the source code and determine if there's anything in there that shouldn't be there. I mean, it's a simple program. You're adding one to a person's total. It's 100 lines of code, tops.
All right. Are you aware of whether there was any protective action in Ohio against this kind of vote rigging through software?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
You were not asked to assist in the development of any protective system. Is that correct?
No, I was not.
In Europe, have you reviewed at all the election results in Ohio?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Given the availability of such vote rigging software and the testimony that has been given under oath of substantial statistical anomalies and gross differences between exit polling data and the actual tabulated results, do you have an opinion whether or not the Ohio election, presidential election, was hacked?
Yes, I would say it was. I mean, if you have exit polling data that is significantly off from the vote, then it's probably hacked.
And your testimony is under oath?
Yes, sir.
And the testimony you've given is true?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
And I have the same question. Back to the podium. Who did you say you were asked to prepare?
I was asked by Tom Feeney. He's now a congressman. At that time, he was Speaker of the House of Florida, Yang Enterprises, which was the company I worked for, lobbyist, and their corporate attorney. He wore a lot of hats.
And at the time, he was the Speaker of the House of Florida. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Congressman.
He's saying he was the lobbyist for the voting machine company at the same time he was Speaker of the House?
I don't know what the voting machine company is. He was a lobbyist for Yang Enterprises. We had NASA contracts. And
Yang Enterprises did what? Computers?
Computers.
Okay, and he was your lobbyist. Your company's lobbyist.
Lobbyist for that company, yes.
And he asked you to design a code to rig an election?
Yes.
While he was Speaker of the Florida House?
Yes.
This was during or previous to the 2000 election?
Yes, October, end of September.
And did he ever express why he wanted a code to rig an election?
No, I immediately assumed that they were trying to keep you guys from cheating. So I wrote up the documentation of what you would look for in the source code, how you would make sure that you didn't get, you know, taken advantage of, make sure that all voting machines had receipts, because that way you could back count the ones that looked a little funny. And I handed it over.
By receipts, you mean a paper trail?
Yes, paper trail. And I handed that in to Mrs. Yang and said, here's your report, here's your program. And she said, you don't understand, we need to hide the fraud in the source code.
Hide the fraud, not reveal the fraud.
Not reveal the fraud, because it's needed to control the vote in South Florida, is what she said.
Oh, that's what she said. Well,
that's
your knowledge. To your knowledge, was this used?
I have no idea. I was ready to leave. So I'm tired and left the company.
Your testimony a moment ago, I think you said just before you left and answered the Congresswoman Tudor Jones question, would you just repeat what you said in terms of the exit polls?
Oh, the exit polls should not be significantly different from the vote.
And if they were, you would conclude what?
I would conclude someone playing with the vote.
Now with the exit polls?
That's possible, too.
Okay.
Something is definitely skewed.
Something is skewed in one or the other vote.
Right. To select which one, you'd have to see where the problem is.
Let me ask you one further question. Assuming for the moment that such software, that's what you call it, such software to rig a vote was used in one or more machines in Ohio or in Florida, could you today detect that if you look at the source code?
If you get the machines and they have not been patched yet, I mean, once they get in and touch them, anything can happen. You can also set timers to do that, but then you see the timers. Then you'd have to take those machines, decompile them, which I couldn't do, but possibly a Microsoft, an MIT, something to do, you might be able to get.
You might.
Not depends on how good they are at destroying what they had.
Destroying what they had by tampering with the machine afterwards or by programming a destroyed instruction in the first place?
Right, because since you didn't...
Either or both.
You didn't actually see what's in there, so you don't know if the code is running in a single executable or running in various modules. If it's running modules, you can make the code actually eat itself.
Let me ask you one further question. I've been told that people who assume that... lots of the election results, that a large fraction of the election results in any state may have been affected by deliberate fraud on the computer, are paranoid because in order to do that, you have to have access to thousands of machines and that would be readily detectable. To what extent is that true?
It depends on the technology you use. If you did a central tabulation machine that fed in, all you have to do is set a flag. You set a flag, the central tabulation machine would then flip your vote.
So one person putting in bad code in a central tabulation machine could affect thousands and thousands or tens of thousands of votes.
Right, and you could activate it. You could activate either automatically, or you could make it so that there's code existing on, like, an electronic machine that feeds it, where you would punch it in, it would set the flag, the server would see the flag, and then...
And if you had a recount, and there were no paper trail, would that be, assuming that had happened, would that be revealable by seeing a discrepancy between what the tabulator, the central tabulator showed, and what the individual machines, which had not been tampered with, showed?
Not if I wrote it.
Why not? In other words,
I would make it match.
You could work back from the tabulator to the individual machines, so the tabulator would tell the machines to switch their results?
Yes. Talk both ways. You can limit whatever you need.
And they actually could talk to each other.
Yes.
The machines
as long as it was hooked up, as long as it was networked together, they could talk to each other.
So in other words, there's absolutely no assurance whatsoever on anything with regard to these machines.
Absolutely none, unless you look at the source code and make sure it's safe before it goes out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Congressman Mattis. I know that Congresswoman Waters has a question, and then Senator Miller, and then Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones.
This will only take a moment if you would come back to the... as you know, there has been a lot of discussion about, I think it was Diebold, company, their relationship to the president and the administration, and supposedly comments about helping to ensure that the president was reelected. In your world, in your environment, have you heard any of this kind of discussion? Do you know people for Diebold? Do you have any sense of any actions that may have been taken?
I don't know anything about that at all.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sir.
I suspect people will attack you in terms of your credibility. Could you restate once again your credentials?
I'm a programmer. I work for NASA, work for ExxonMobil, work for Florida Department of Transportation, and other elements of my story, because this company, well, let's get into it. Why not? This company also had NASA contracts, and they were basically downloading tons of information, I mean gigabytes worth, and handing off to this little Chinese guy named Henry Nee. And it didn't seem right, and you know, he was hacking things, and I wrote a program for DOT that allowed contractors to send their information into DOT. And he was kind of the quality assurance guy for software. He put a wiretapping module in the program that went out to the contractors so that it actually sent everything they sent back to Yang. So I reported all this, and just last March, I think, he was arrested for attempting to send anti-tank missile chips to the capital of Communist China. So if that's correct, this is such a small thing. Of course, I think he only got a $100 fine. And no time.
Thank you. Congresswoman Stephanie Tubbs Jones.
Thank you. We are now going to back to the public testimony.
Oh, not so quick. Back to some more of this testimony. The campus community updates with a little piggy song. Chirpy, chirpy, chirpy. That's a bird. That's not a pig. That's a bird. I heard that bird. Okay, campus community updates. Oh, I'm going to tell you what you were just listening to, because it's pretty freaking important, I'd say. And what we were listening to was a computer programmer / whistleblower, Clinton Curtis, talking about, well, how, I'm not too sure about this last election, but how the two elections before that were, they were stolen. They put in the person who didn't get the most votes. They had to steal the votes. And what happened last night? I don't know. I'm pretty frustrated that almost 99% of American people chose the same party, Democrats and Republicans, no difference between them. Moving on here. Okay, that's going to do it for the campus community updates. I have in studio with me right now Lynn Living on Purpose Thompson. Her show is Living on Purpose, and she is on air. Hi, Lynn. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Raymond. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in.
Yeah.
And you have been, doing radio things for quite a while, but you've also been writing.
Mm.
And so you are... you're a writer, and you have something to share, and it's concerning a topic of great social and political import, money.
Money.
Money is the theme of, it seems to be the theme of the news of last week's. So, welcome to the show, Lynn. It's been a little while since you've been on, but thanks for coming around.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I was on the phone, I think, last time I was on, and I'm just happening to go by, and that's why we decided to align ourselves at this time of your show, Raymond.
Very nice.
I'm usually at home listening to your show.
Oh, thanks. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Speaking of which, Living on Purpose is Fridays 11 to 12
a.m. That is.
A.M.
Mm-hmm. I sing along with the joy of random giving. As the last flung penny rolled off into the sunset, the shiny penny remained in the open palm where it was being considered. A penny for my thoughts.
Gladly. You're worth it. You're worth every penny. The end.
The end.
Very nice.
Well, how about that, eh? What a little tour.
I think that's pretty fun to follow a penny around. And, indeed, a lot of cliches cliches in a good way, of course. But, yeah, all these phrases that we have connected to money,
it's astounding, really.
It's huge. Yeah.
So, I hope that people were able to follow that. I mean, you made a lovely little penny there, Raymond. Thank you.
Well, thanks. Did I sound shiny?
You sounded pretty shiny, but I got to say that, you know, for having the least amount of lines, you didn't practice them very much.
I'm sorry. I was practicing my David Icke.
Oh, that's what it was.
No, sorry.
You did great. I'm just giving you a hard time because you opted for the least amount of lines.
Like I did, yeah.
People often will do that on stage.
Yeah.
But it was fun for me to actually read the whole thing through. I haven't done that, you know,
nice.
In public for a while. Now, to some things, how much time do we have left?
We have a couple minutes.
That's all we need for the song.
If you can sing your fantastic song in short minutes.
Yeah, I can do it.
Let's hear a song about money.
Okay. You gotta work for your money, make your money work for you. Make a living, make a killing, get your money's worth. Time is money and there's never enough. What I would do with more of that stuff. There's no easy money and it doesn't grow on trees. Who are you to think that life's a breeze? Put your money where your mouth is. It'll cost you an arm and a leg. Watch it or you'll pay through the nose. You never know where it all goes. You gotta pinch that penny, stretch that dollar, make it last. Don't spend it all in one place. You can't take it with you. No free lunch and no free ride. We're all in the same boat wanting cash flow. Everything costs money. It's a good deal. It's a steal. Hard-earned money, good money, cold hard cash. I'm a wage slave. I work for the almighty dollar. This working for a living is going to kill me. I'm dying to win the lottery, and then I'll protect my wealth. Got any spare change? Can you spare a dime? I can't afford to. I can't afford not to. Is this worth it? Yes, I am rich man, with thanks for blessings that I see every day. Sunlight, moonlight, family, laughter, friends, love is all that matters in the end. Yes, I am rich man, with thanks for blessings that I see every day. Sunlight, moonlight, family, laughter, friends, love is all that matters in the end. Love is all that matters in the end. Ha!
Well done. I like the moral of that song. That is the money song, but it's love that matters. Lynn Thompson, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Raymond.
Okay, be well. And friends out there, we'll see you again next week. My guest is, where's my piece of paper? It's Jack East. Following week, the tinfoil hat, Beata Van Berkum, followed by DJ Ball from Vancouver We Are Change, followed by Tony Hall, a professor in Lethbridge who's one of our newest truth activists. So I'm going to put on a Bob Marley song, Top Rankin'. See you next week.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.